In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 395. What a delight it is to welcome Charles Goyette to the show today. Charles is a legendary name in broadcasting, particularly in Phoenix. He is the New York Times best-selling author of The Dollar Meltdown, and today is the launch date of a major project that I'm delighted to be able to share with you finally and to have him here to talk about. It is called Empire of Lies, the Ron Paul documentary, and you can help make it happen. It's all very exciting. So let's turn things over to Charles Goyette. Charles, welcome to the show.
Tom, it's great to speak with you. It's great to speak with one of the really, really effective champions of liberty in our era. You know how George Bush used to call himself the decidifier? He was the one that got to decidify. Well, you're the explainifier. You're the one that gets to explainify everything, and we're just really proud that you're out there explainifying these days.
That's very kind of you to say, Charles. Thank you. I am so thrilled to be able to help to announce the launch of your project, which has been, up to this point, a confidential project, and now the world is going to know about it. Give us the two-minute overview of what you're doing and the significance of it.
You know, a lot of people have approached Ron Paul over the years suggesting that they do a documentary in conjunction with him or seeking his cooperation in a documentary project. I decided some time back that it particularly with his turning 80 this year and with the possibility of the Ron Paul brand and his accomplishments being kind of confused or diluted in the public consciousness, you know, what he has done for this movement, for the freedom movement, needs to be chiseled in stone in the national consciousness of the American people. So I thought it was time to do a feature length, a theatrical quality documentary about Ron Paul and his battle with the state and his intrepid championship of liberty. And I brought the issue up to him. And of course, he's, you know, as you know so well, he's modest and he didn't want it to be about him and so on, which served my purposes perfectly because I didn't want to do a biography. I didn't want to talk about, you know, where he was born and what it was like in medical school and what was his time like in the Air Force and so on. I wanted to talk about his battles with the Empire of Lies. I wanted to talk about his battles with the party hacks. I wanted to talk about the lapdog press and the way that they tried to bury the news of the Ron Paul Revolution. So, you know, his modesty served my purposes entirely for a documentary that really addresses the Empire of the Lies and shows our respect to Ron Paul and his tremendous work.
It's funny you mention his reluctance to do this. I'm sure anybody listening to this show would have predicted that, knowing his personality. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've said this publicly ever, but back in 2009, I approached him with the idea of writing an autobiography. I said, why don't you consider writing your life story? Because I know your project isn't going to be his life story, but his life story is also kind of interesting because it does include all these other things about his political struggles and so on and so forth. And he honestly, I mean, he just about was there to go along with it, but ultimately he just couldn't believe anybody would care. And I thought, you know, I wanted to say, Ron, you know, modesty is one thing, but this is getting ridiculous. Like, I mean, you don't think these are people who would, you know, trudge through, you know, the trenches for you, you know, like, I mean, who would crawl over broken glass for you. You don't think they want to know your life story, but anyway, but that's, you know, that's Ron. I think this story of his has to be recorded for a lot of reasons, but one of them, the most pressing one for me is that those were such great years, just the presidential election years, even though his story goes, of course, farther into the past than that. But those presidential campaigns of 2008 and 2012 were really some of the most exciting times I can recall. They were thrilling. Every day you'd wake up and you'd go on YouTube and see, okay, what did he say today? You know, whose head exploded today because of something Ron said? Or what's he up to today? You'd be so excited. Or what was the huge crowd that came out to see him today? It was so thrilling. And I fear that people who are younger are never going to experience something like that. I want them to know this really happened and this is what it felt like.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. It was very heady stuff. It was for me as well. It was every day was exciting. We waited for the next, we waited for Ron to set fire to the next index card of allowable opinion, and he never disappointed. It was wonderful. And you know, one of the aspects of this story has to be the treatment of the lapdog press for their treatment of Ron. They just couldn't believe that somebody was willing to challenge or to defy the Washington consensus. And he did over and over again. And I know, you know, some of the ones that were worth Bob Schieffer on CBS on that show. I mean, his behavior was downright rude to Ron because Ron, you know, didn't buy everything that everybody in Washington believed. But of course, Bob Schieffer believed and propagated the story about the non-existent WMDs. He visibly swooned at the sight of George W. Bush in a flight suit, proclaiming mission accomplished long before we were even close to being able to call an end to that sordid affair. But all of these guys, it wasn't Schieffer, it was Bill O'Reilly, wasn't he? He was insufferably rude. And in going back and, you know, looking at a little background material and beginning to plan some of the things that need to be covered, I pulled up one, it's available on YouTube, I pulled up a visit of Ron Paul on Bill O'Reilly's show back in 2007. Well, this is 2015, so we've had 8 years intervening for the truth to have its way out. And if you look at that interview, virtually everything that Bill O'Reilly said was utter nonsense. And everything that Ron Paul said, as you and I would expect, you know, came to pass. So there was Ron Paul telling him in 2007, the American invasion of Iraq helped Iran, and Bill O'Reilly goes, well, that may or may not be true. Ron said, well, you know, when we went into Afghanistan, we didn't do what the American people were told we were going to do in there, and we let Osama bin Laden get away. Oh, O'Reilly was beside himself. He said, no, that's war. We didn't let him get away. He escaped. That's what happens in war. But of course, we all know, in fact, frankly, guys like you and I and your listeners and Ron Paul supporters knew back then that, I'll give you an example. General Tommy Franks, in fact, Senator Bob Graham of Florida back then on the Senate Intelligence Committee told me that General Tommy Franks said, you know, we took resources off the pursuit of Osama bin Laden. We were closing in on him. We took resources off the pursuit of Osama bin Laden so we could prepare for Bush's elective war in Iraq. You know, Ron knew all this stuff. And to go back after 8 years and to, you know, reconstruct the record, it's pretty amazing that he's right as rain. And guys like Bill O'Reilly are bloviating, and everything they bloviate about is simply wrong.
Charles, as you describe this to me, what I'm reminded of is a little project of my own back in the 2012 campaign. I had a hand in a couple of TV commercials for Ron that we put together in Revolution Pack, and one of them was a one-minute ad. And I'll tell you, it took me 2 days to write the script for this one-minute ad, because to try to tell people about this man in 1 minute and do him justice is hard, though not impossible. In fact, I'll try and remember on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/395, where we'll have the Kickstarter link for your project. We'll get to more of that in a minute and what the Kickstarter thing will be all about. But I'm going to put a link to this little ad, because I have a feeling that your story is going to be the however many hour version of my 1 minute ad, where I was saying that he was the only one who predicted the financial crisis. He's not in the back pocket of the banksters. He didn't vote for the bailouts. I mean, in other words, unlike all these other phonies, this guy actually does the things that they pretend to do or claim to do. So it was a lot of fun to do it, to have that opportunity. You've got a tremendous opportunity right now with this project. where are you going to start? I mean, tell me kind of the story you want to tell. Are you going to go back to his initial election in the late 70s? Are you going to start when he became more popular? What's the time frame that you're looking at here?
Well, in reality, that is certainly part of the story. I mean, isn't this really essential to the Ron Paul story? How is it that, first of all, how is it that he wasn't corrupted in the way that so many people we think are one of us or good guys, you know, that sort of get it, that get sent off to Washington and immediately buy in or sell out, whatever the phrase is, you know, how was it? What was it different about him? And I know he'll be, you know, modest and maybe not give us a deep answer about that. We'll just, you know, he'll say that he did what was right. But even that, Tom, isn't that something different in this day and age? Somebody that said, well, I will do what is right and I will do what I promise to do. And I won't be bought off. Even though they brought in, as you know, the heavy artillery. I mean, the Republican hacks, you know, were constantly fishing for people to run against him, constantly fishing for ways to turn off his raising of campaign funds. I suspect, you know, when he didn't vote, you know, for some majority issue, you know, they threatened to give him an office down the hall in the Capitol building that was the size of a broom closet. You know, they just, you know, but yet he was never moved by any of this stuff that corrupts everybody else, as we know. And so I think that is part of the story. And I'd like to talk about that. You know, another part of the story is, in fact, I hate to bring up Bill O'Reilly again, but it was a couple of weeks ago. I saw Bill O'Reilly doing one of his little segments in which he said, would you have dinner with? And he asked his panel of guests, would you have dinner with Ron Paul? And a couple of them said, oh, yeah, it'd be great to. And O'Reilly said, oh, I wouldn't have dinner with Ron Paul. Ron Paul doesn't have one single major piece of legislation with his name appended to it. And I'm thinking, right on. That's exactly right. And yet he had more impact than the fathomless parade of imbeciles that have marched through Congress over the time that he had been here that are all utterly forgotten. He's had more impact because he's been true to his principles all that time. So yes, that is certainly a part of the story.
It would have been very easy for him if he had just wanted nothing more than influence to just try to just cut back a little bit on the foreign policy talk. There were a lot of reasons the establishment didn't like him, and they still wouldn't have liked him, but they could have maybe lived with him a bit more if he had just shut his mouth a bit or toned it down on foreign policy. And he knew that. He knew that was the implicit deal being made with him. And he not only did he not do that, he did the opposite. I would find that in interviews, he would go out of his way to bring up foreign policy and say, you know, we can't talk about spending without talking about foreign policy. Or we can't talk about this and that without talking about foreign policy or the Federal Reserve. Over and over, he brought it back to foreign policy because he thought, yeah, I could just sit here and give red meat speeches, but that's what everybody else is doing, so what would be my role here? My role is to tell the truth come what may. There aren't that many people who would do that in that situation. We would all be tempted to moderate what we're saying, and then we would justify that to ourselves by saying, well, look, in the long run, I'll be more influential. No, in the long run, you will be sucked into the vortex. Like, we all know that that's exactly what would happen.
Truth has its own power, and it sometimes plays out subtly in unexpected ways. But exactly as you say, wasn't that the electric? Wasn't that the galvanizing moment on the debate when Rudy Giuliani said, I demand that you retract this slur on America or whatever?
Yeah, not only did he not retract it, he intensified it. I mean, no one
Absolutely.
Ever does that. You know that the usual thing is when an apology is demanded of you. Well, we have like a little script. It's like a liturgical text where you get out there and you beat your breast and you apologize that you ever accidentally said something truthful, and people maybe admit you to polite society once again, and he refused to do that. Now, what about the objection you might get from some people? There is a sliver of people in the libertarian movement who will say that our treatment of Ron Paul is like hagiography. That we worship this guy, we treat him with undue reverence, and it's not befitting of libertarianism. That yeah, Ron was a good guy, but enough's enough. How do you deal with that?
he was, first of all, he was much more than a good guy. And when you talk about his refusing to follow the script, I'm reminded of an incident. In fact, Tom, actually, I let a little secret out of the bag. I don't know if it'll play a part in the final cut, but I'm going to go back someplace in the archives and hope that I can find a moment in the 2008 campaign when Ron was on with Neil Cavuto on Fox Business. And, you know, I mean, you know, everybody listening to your show right now, they know the script, how these things go. Somebody, opposition research, gets into your donor file. Everybody does this. This is American politics at its disgusting lowest. Somebody in opposition research gets into your donor file and they try to find somebody that, you know, was a, you know, disreputable in some ways, or they were druggies in college, or they, you know, declared bankruptcy, or they were affiliated with a disreputable group that gave the candidate a donation. And then you tout it on, you know, national TV, you know, so-and-so my opponent. And they did this with Ron in 2008. And I don't even remember the circumstances, but I remember the playbook. And I, you know, I have seen senators say on TV, well, when we find somebody who's given us, you know, money that's disreputable, we give it back. And so Neil Cavuto asked Ron, he said, well, you know, so-and-so is disreputable and he's giving your campaign money. When are you going to give it back? And Ron's a Zen master. He honestly, he's some kind of a Zen master, because he doesn't buy the orthodoxy that you attack so well in Real Dissent. He said, well, I'm not going to give the money back. And Neil Cavuto said, well, you've got to give the money back, because that's what, you know, you're tainted by it. And he said, Ron said, you've just told me that this guy is up to no good, and if he'll use the money for ill ends, why should I give it back to him when I'm using the money to further the cause of liberty in America?
It's such a good answer.
Oh!
Why? So in other words, you're telling me this guy is terrible, so give him more money? Like, what is the sense in that? And then the idea that Ron is tainted, as if this guy's money is going to make him do something he wouldn't ordinarily do. Ronald Reagan couldn't twist Ron Paul's arm. Some loser isn't going to be able to do it either. But of course he's right, because if we did that, all the politicians have to give back 90% of their donation. Not that I have any problem with that, I suppose, in principle. But, I mean, you look at all the, he would say, look at all the donations they're getting from the military-industrial complex that are not donations because these people believe in their philosophy of federalism or constitutionalism or whatever. They want to be on the gravy train. Why don't you confront those people on that? He was saying things that, again, as you say, that don't go by the script. Tell me about the Kickstarter campaign. I know most people listening know what a Kickstarter campaign is, but tell us about it and what. I mean, we're going to link to it at tomwoods.com/395. I've got really nice show notes pages that I've been badgering people to come visit. But this is the one, right? This is, everything's on the line here. If you enjoy this show, which you are getting for free Monday through Friday, then the thing I am going to ask of you politely is that you go to tomwoods.com/395 so that you can click on this Kickstarter link. So tell us about it.
Well, I thank you very much for that, Tom. I really do need the help of Ron Paul supporters and friends of liberty, people that are sick of business as usual, of the central planning state, of the monetary fraud of the state, of all the business as usual, the crony capitalism that school children are told is an example of capitalism. People that are sick of that, I'm really dependent on their help. I set out to do this project thinking I might do it the old-fashioned way, and I actually started tugging on people's sleeves and said, you know, I'd like to do this project, and you know, can I count on you for contribution? And I will tell you, it wasn't my idea originally, but virtually everybody that I talked to, that in the supporters that I had known over the two couple of campaigns, virtually insisted that I had to crowdfund this. This had to be a grassroots effort. And believe me, I understand their point, maybe even better than they did. I mean, I've been in corporate media a good deal of my life, and I know the pitfalls. I know the problems. I know the way that, you know, that if you sell your soul to a corporate project, you're liable to get your project diluted, your message watered down very badly. You start to lose control of it in that way. So They were right, and it's clear to me as we've gone this far that this has to be independent, has to be funded by the grassroots, because I don't want to tell, you know, I don't want to tell a story that would be, you know what it is? It's typically something like this. You get funding from an institution or something, and they go, well, it's okay if you champion Ron Paul as a fiscal conservative, but, you know, you don't want to say anything about his foreign policy stand, because that would alienate a part of the audience. And I say, well, that's exactly what I'm going to highlight. And somebody else will say, you know, maybe people that would be, I don't know, in another part of the political spectrum say, well, it's okay. You know, he certainly was right about the Iraq war. And it's okay if you do that. But this business about gold and a monetary system, you know, that's a little fringy. You've got to cut that out. Well, I'm not willing to do it, Tom. I'd rather not do the project than do that. And so for that reason, it made perfect sense to do this as a Kickstarter campaign. And we launched today on Tuesday, May the 5th. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of rewards, which are just nice acknowledgments for your contribution. I'm really proud to say that you contributed autographed copies of Real Descent. Lou Rockwell has contributed books. David Stockman autographed books. And so on and so forth. And as a matter of fact, for our top donors at the top end, Ron has agreed to a small private dinner with our major contributors. And, so we'll be doing that in the fall, and it'll be, you know, I'm going to limit it sharply to 20 contributors at that level. And they and their spouses will be able to come and enjoy a private, dinner with Ron. So he's been very helpful in that regard. This turned out to be actually the way to go, and I couldn't have done it without your help and the help of others that understand the impact that Ron has had on the national debate in this country.
Charles, tell us something about your own background. It's interesting that Ron has not, until this project, agreed to collaborate or support this type of documentary, but he supports you. And in the video on the Kickstarter page, he comes right out and says, it's because I trust you. It's because I know you know the philosophy. Now, you've been working with him closely on podcasting and broadcasting. I'll get to that in a minute. But give me your own background. You were in radio in Phoenix for a long time. In fact, I don't know if you even remember this, but maybe 10 years ago, you had me on because I had the Politically Incorrect Guide to American History on. I didn't know you at all at that point, and then over the years I realized, well, this guy's a big name guy. I got to meet you in person at the Revolution March in 2008, which was a lot of fun. Then I spoke at a university in Arizona, and to my delight, you introduced me and gave me this very generous introduction. Now, I remember a story having to do with your views on the Iraq War and your departure from radio. Can you include that in your story?
Well, I haven't thought about it in a very long time. It was kind of a painful episode, but basically, I give the real background. I worked for a little old company named Clear Channel, which owned more radio stations in the United States than anybody else. And I think the vice chairman of Clear Channel, there were links between them and George W. Bush to beat the band. I mean, they were totally connected. Entities, and they did not appreciate my opposition to his elective war, and all during the drum beating and the buildup and the false representations about why we had to go to war in Iraq. I was like a sore thumb in prime time on one of their flagship stations. And it was a peculiar interruption or diversion in my career, because these guys had singled me out for great things in their corporation. And they're actually the leading station in the group was a big talk station in Los Angeles. And they would fly me out there to do shows on the station in LA when somebody was gone. They had a pretty high opinion of my ability to do a talk show, but they had a very low opinion of my dissent on the Iraq war. And I would even have executives call me. Here's a case. I've never divulged this fellow's name, and I'm never going to do it, but called me at home one time. He was a senior executive in the operation, and said, we talked about it, and he was trying to get me to soft pedal my objections and so on. And he says, you know, the truth is, Charles, that I agree with you about the war. And I said, is that right? And he said, yeah. And then we went on with our conversation about, you know, how this is so damaging to the brand and so on. He called me later that night at home and said, please, with actually a little quiver in his voice, Tom, and said, you know, what I told you today about, you know, agreeing with you about the war, please don't mention that to anybody. And I never have. But everybody in the industry was cowed, or they were mesmerized into believing that this was the truth, or that the state can't be questioned, and so on. And even those that saw a little bit through the charade, you know, were afraid to let it be publicly known because they didn't want to be Dixie chicked. You know, they didn't want to be outed and shamed for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's basically what happened to me. And so they had grand plans for me in that corporation, and they all came to an abrupt end, with my recalcitrance about the war, and I don't regret a minute of it.
Do you tell us about the podcasting and broadcasting you've been doing with Ron? Are you still doing that?
No, we did that for a couple of years. It was really, really fortunate. We got a chance to to put him. Oh, this is a choice bit of irony, Tom. You'll love this. We got a chance to get him on, 125 stations around the country with twice a day radio commentaries. And it's been a little, two and a half years ago. And guess who we replaced? There was ending his run of doing these radio commentaries after years and years and years, and we slipped in there and we took the slot over. It was Bill O'Reilly.
Oh,
yeah.
About
so
that.
Yeah. So it was not only did you get rid of kind of a negative in the public debate, but you added a positive with Ron's daily comment. So we did that for a couple of years, and it ran its natural life course as those things do. But it was a wonderful opportunity to have Ron on there just commenting about the news of the day every single day, twice a day in morning drive and afternoon drive on radio stations all over the country. And so I enjoyed that a great deal, and we did a podcast in conjunction with that.
All right, I want to get people to support this project. This is my most urgent goal, is to support Empire of Lies, the Ron Paul documentary. Just tell me the last details I want to know. When are you looking to have it finished, and how long do you think it would be?
Okay, so it's usually those things run about 100 minutes, 105 minutes. I mean, it's a theatrical quality documentary. And it's somewhere short of 2 hours. It can run up to 110 minutes, and it's just dictated by the material. My hope is to have it ready to go this time next year. So we're doing a Kickstarter campaign. It lasts 30 days. It began today, and lasts 30 days, and then we'll go into principal production. Oh, we'll be coming to see you, Tom.
That'll be fun. I would enjoy
that. Oh, yeah. You're on the short list. In fact, I've already told my associates in this project, an issue comes up or something, I go, Tom's a great explainifier. Well, that's perfect for Tom.
I will do my best. I look forward to it.
It'd be great to have you on there. And so we're going to, end up trotting around the country with a film crew and seeing people. We'll sit down with Ron 3 or 4 times for extended, lengthy conversations, but then go around to talk with people that, shed light on different aspects of what he has accomplished and the challenges that we face in trying to reassert America as a home of a free and prosperous people. So we will wrap up the Kickstarter campaign in 30 days. And then start principal production.
I know you have to think about the immediate run, but I hope you are also dreaming about how to make the initial screening a memorable event too.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, it kind of depends on how the funding goes, but we expect, in fact, one of the, we like to acknowledge the people that contribute to the project, and so we're going to have for the larger donors, we're going to have a private dinner with Ron. He's generously consented to help us by appearing at a private dinner that's limited to 20 donors and their significant others. In addition to that, we're doing a number of different things, but there will be premier events for contributors. We think they may be in a couple of places around the country to be determined, probably in Texas, near Ron's home, and probably perhaps in Washington and so on and so forth. So that's undetermined, but we've got a special place in our heart and a special seat at any of those events for donors to the campaign. We've got great support from freedom-loving people. You have donated, we're very, very grateful that you've donated autographed copies of Real Dissent to contributors. Lou's donated copies of his most recent book. David Stockman, very, very generous with us in supporting this and others. So we've got a lot of support in there. They're nice tokens, but the real achievement of the documentary and the what should really be gratifying for your help and the contributions that any listeners can make is that, you know, it's to further the discussion of freedom in this country. It's not good enough for us, I think, Tom, to let the Ron Paul accomplishments and the Ron Paul brand somehow be diluted with other people that, you know, claim to come from the same movement or the same ideology, and yet, you know, don't have the resilience and the insight and the wisdom that Ron had. So he's a character wholly out of the bolt of cloth from which so many others are cut. You know, that I think that needs to be memorialized. It needs to be remembered. Maybe it'll be a role model for future people that seek to, you know, take on the empire of lies.
Charles, I'm going to urge people who are driving around as they're listening to us, which I think is what most people do when they're listening, to just jot a note down to yourself, just tomwoods.com/395. That's all you have to write down. You don't have to write our names. Well, I guess you're writing my name down, but you don't have to write anything else down, no titles, anything. Just tomwoods.com/395 is going to take you to that Kickstarter link. I want as many listeners as I can possibly drive over there to support this extremely important and worthy project. Charles, thanks for your time today, and best of luck.
Tom, thank you so much for your great help and your support, too. I appreciate you so much.
All right, everybody. I think I have adequately stressed the urgency of visiting tomwoods.com/395. I would very, very much like to see this project succeed, and I hope you guys joining me can help make that happen. TomWoods.com/395 is where you can find the link to the Kickstarter campaign. So do please do that. Spread the word about it. Let's see what we can do, everybody, because this could be fantastic if we make it happen. So that is in your hands. I turn it over to you now, and TomWoods.com/395. You know what to do. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.